Hello and welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to episode 72 of the Footmarks podcast. I'm Behram Kazi, who you can find at Def Mango on Twitter. And with me, as always, is Jared Kimber, who you can find literally everywhere. And yeah, the beard is still not back. I'm sure you guys are all used to that now. But the title of this particular podcast is What Happens When India Lose? And I feel like it's a really relevant one, Jared, because, you know, 4,331 days is the duration for which India were unbeaten in a home test series. It amounts to 12 years and 18 consecutive series wins, which is phenomenal if you think about it, right? But then the fact that this streak has been brought to an end by an out-of-form New Zealand side, which are in transition and did not have Kane Williamson at their disposal, it's still a really hard reality to buy, isn't it?
They didn't have Matt Henry for the second test.
Yeah.
It's you know insane. What I mean? Like, you know, it's ridiculous. I don't really know how to fully compute it because I think in the history of test cricket, what happens generally is the better side just eventually works it out. I know it's a three test series and not a four or a five test series, but even so, it's like, India just had chances and they never did what they usually do, which is just flip the game very quickly and go on about their business. They just kept fucking up, right?
Yeah.
They just did time and time again. And New Zealand players who were either massively out of form or had never had any form in the, you know, in when we talk about Mitch Santner, just completely stood up. And it's such a bizarre situation for this particular game, or this particular series, I should say.
Yeah, I mean, bizarre might be underselling it even, because it was just flat out batshit crazy. And I mean, in these 4,331 days, India played 55 tests in those 18 series, or well, now 19, because we're going to count these. And they've lost six games, right? Including the New Zealand ones. And let's just address the elephant in the room first up, right? The outlier, very, very clear outlier of the six, which was the Bengaluru test versus New Zealand.
Yeah.
Now, the ball over there was swinging and seaming and the deck had variable bounce. It was offering nothing to spinners. Matt Henry and William O'Rourke had an absolute blast and they obliterated India, bowled them out for 46 in the first innings. And New Zealand ended up winning a test match in conditions which were more New Zealand-like and very, very alien to what you expect in India.
Yeah, I think the toss played a huge part. Both captains were going to bat first, obviously. So it wasn't as if it was thought about afterwards that Rohit had made a mistake. And it's like, well, if Latham was going to do the same thing, I think it's fair to say that no one really predicted that. But it played a huge part, right? Like in winning the toss and batting first, suddenly you were in this other world. And then the pitch starts to even out after about 25 overs. And so that at that stage, India don't have no batters left, right? So, I think it's the fact that the spinners didn't do very well, the fact that even India came back from 350 runs behind and got a lead and got themselves back into the game, you know, it was a bit of a crazy game, all things considered. That's the easiest one to throw away, I think, of all these games.
I do have a follow-up question, though, and I was really curious about this, that have you ever seen a similar deck to or overall playing conditions to Bengaluru in this 55 test run, which, you know, in a game which India probably would have won?
No, I've seen venues in India that have favoured seam bowlers. I think the most interesting thing about this is that obviously the conditions played a big part, right? As in, sorry, not the conditions, that's the wrong way of putting it, but the quite literally the fact that the rain had been around for so much meant that the pitch wasn't really made what it was supposed to be. So we've had seaming decks. I'm not sure if we've ever had a seaming deck where the spinners don't play any part, but we've probably had a couple. I don't think there's been many in those 55-odd tests where you would have a situation where the spinners were useless. It wasn't just helping seam. It was helping seam in multiple ways. And then it kind of evens out at one stage as well and becomes a wicket where both teams made a lot of runs in the middle there.
Yeah. Okay, now let's come to Pune, because it's really interesting how six losses for India at home in these 12 years, and two of them have come in Pune, right? Australia and New Zealand. But they were both very different to each other, Jared, in the sense that you know, in the recent Pune test, oddly enough, once again, slow spin bowling was better and tall spinners were favored. Whereas back in the day, you had Steve O'Keefe taking all those wickets, right? He was no Mitch Santner. I mean, Mitch Santner is no Mitch Santner if we really want to talk about that. But O'Keefe and Mitch Santner are very, very different kinds of slow left armers. One is tall, one is not. And I think O'Keefe is definitely quicker through the air when compared to Santner.
Mm. I think he's quicker through the air. I don't think he'd be quicker than Jadeja or anyone else. So, yeah, I think you're right. The two Pune wickets are very different. The one thing that – Pune don't have enough cricket, so we might never have the data to be able to prove this. The one thing that might be interesting is – and I think Himanesh had a good look at this – of just bowling slower did seem to help. And you could see by the end, Ashwin was just trying to bowl slower and slower. The thing is that Santner quite often varies his pace by 15 to 20 kilometres. Ashwin doesn't usually vary it by that much because he doesn't have to, right? So,
yeah.
So it's a very different situation to be able to do that. And it's not as simple as just bowling slower, which is, I think, what most people do. But if you've ever bowled spin, if you do just try and bowl slow, you just usually bowl a really bad ball. It's the same as when it's like bowl quicker. And it's like, well, any spinner in the world can bowl quicker, but they probably won't be spinning in the ball. So, I think there's a few elements there of that. Maybe again, the sort of, it might just be a slightly different kind of wicket than other Indian wickets where maybe it plays more like a, I know it's nowhere near Sri Lanka or anything, but maybe it plays more like a Sri Lankan kind of surface or, you know, something a little bit different. And it just doesn't suit the Indian spinners as much. I think this last wicket was particularly extreme because of the tall nature as well. But I still wonder if you get Ashwin and Washington Sundar to bowl on that wicket consistently, if they don't just work out how to take wickets on it ahead of, or, you know, at least at the same rate as Mitch Santner combined.
I mean, Pune back in the day in the Australia win was, you know, offering a lot of turn. It was a bit of a raging turner. This was not that. It was a bit different. No. Lots of poor shots by Indian batters, right? I still can't get
also
over the Kohli.
Bounce.
Yeah, the bounce. But the Kohli, Pant and Sarfaraz dismissals are bothering me to this day because I just feel like they could have played those deliveries better.
Yes, and I think you could make, I mean, Sarfaraz probably not, but I think the other two, you could probably say that they thought they were doing the right thing and it just didn't go their way. But yeah, no, I think you're right. I think, you know, I was at that test in Pune and the ball was just pinging around everywhere.
Yeah.
This was not a ragging turner in that same way.
Yeah, and I mean, Steve O'Keefe was specifically picked in the side to do what he did. Whereas Mitch Santner was probably picked as a balance provider who can bat a bit and bowl a few overs.
No,
someone.
Mitch Santner was picked because Michael Bracewell's wife was having a baby, right? I mean, let's be honest. Steve O'Keefe was part of Australia's plans in that tour. Like, you know, they got a specialist spin coach coming in. Sri, I've forgotten his name, but Sri from Tamil Nadu.
Yeah.
That was where he started his whole run coaching with Australia. They literally brought him in for that series. Very different than the Mitch Santner thing where it was just like, okay, well, you're a spinner and you have a pulse and you're here, so you're going to have to play.
Yeah, just to remind everybody that prior to this Pune test, Santner had 54 wickets in 28 test matches, if I'm not wrong. And now he has 67, so 13 wickets have come in one game, which is 19.5% of his overall test tally. Just to put things into
context.
And
his first class average was 42.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's not like some world-beating spinner came and defeated India.
No.
And it wasn't even a ranked earner like we saw, you know, all those years ago.
Yeah, exactly.
And there's a similarity here in both Australian wins, right? There is that extreme where the ball is ragging like crazy. You know, we've discussed Pune, but there's Indoor as well, where, you know, you don't need to have exceptional spinners to, you know, get the ball to do stuff. And Nathan Lyon at that point had kind of worked out how to bowl in India. And I feel like, you know, as much as we talk about how India have won so many games on those sorts of pitches, you have these two solid examples of it going south.
Yeah, well, I think when Indoor happened, I wrote about Pune as well of just, there's no reason for the look. I understand the basic idea of making the pitches more friendly to spinners because your team plays spin better and you bowl spin better. Like, I do get that, but I just think when you make it that random, you actually just allow for, you know, Todd Murphy and Matt Kuhneman to back up one good spinner, and then suddenly you're in trouble. You shouldn't India doesn't need to do that. They were too good a side to worry about that. But we've seen that as well with South Africa over the years. When they've tried to make their wickets really good for pace bowling, sometimes they just make it so random that any team could win. And that's taking away your advantage. You want it to be on your side, but you don't want it to be so random that, you know, one good spell from Nathan Lyon can win a game. And, you know, so I think in Pune and in Indore, they probably made that a little bit wrong.
Yeah, definitely. And next up is England, of course. Only three teams have won two test matches each, of course, in these 12 years. Mm. And England have won it twice, New Zealand and Australia.
Not a single Asian team.
Yeah, not a single Asian team, which is a very, very interesting little nugget over there. Of course, Pakistan didn't play in India. And Pakistan, there was a period. There was a period in between where, you know, Yasir Shah or Syed Ajmal could have potentially done something, you know.
I think there's a period where they could have won some tests. Yeah. I mean, whether they would have won them consistently or drawn a series, probably not. But winning tests, I think, was within their reign. Sri Lanka just doesn't really translate brilliantly to India, even if you go back in history. Yeah. And Bangladesh finally got good, came over, and we're all like, this would be interesting. It was not interesting.
It was definitely anything but interesting. It was interesting for a day and a half, and then it was just business as usual.
That they made a result happen, yes. Not the actual Bangladesh cricket.
Yeah, basically. But yeah, coming to the England losses, right? There is a similarity in both of them, in the sense that in both Chennai and Hyderabad, which was this year, two English batters really rose to the occasion. Chennai was all about Joe Root, who was in another one of his purple patches back in the day, I think you wrote that you thought that was his peak, which I chuckled at that. And then, of course,
I mean, it probably was, because I think, didn't he make 700 or 800 runs in three test matches? So it probably was his peak. It's just that he's found another one anyway.
Yeah. But, you know, the last one in Hyderabad, you'd have to give a lot of that credit to the baseball approach. And, I mean, we were talking about this earlier in the Pakistan-England podcast, how Ollie Pope's 196 in Hyderabad won England that game. And it sounds like, or seems like, a complete outlier as well at this point. Mm. Like, he hasn't been able to buy a run since. And he's looked very, very dodgy versus spin, which is what we thought he might have overcome in Hyderabad, right? But it's two really, really solid batting knocks that kind of knock India out in those games, right?
Yeah, I mean, if you think about it, I mean, how ridiculous it is that England made 600 against India. Mm. And the idea of them making 600 in India now is such a fantasy, right? Like, it's moved so, you know, their cricket has changed in such a weird direction. But yeah, look, Ollie Pope's innings, I think, just shocked India. And they just kept thinking he was going to go out, and he didn't. And they didn't handle it particularly well, specifically the reverse sweeps. Hmm. And if you go back to the Chennai test, it's probably conventional sweeps that were the bigger issue. But also in Chennai, they didn't have their main bowling attack available to them. So they only had one of their great spinners. Washington was still in development at that point. Certainly not the bowler he is now. So it was, you know, there were some issues there. But yeah, it was both times England just made a lot more runs than India were assuming they would be able to.
And if I'm not wrong, both times Jadeja was unavailable, wasn't he?
You might be right. I can't remember the Hyderabad test.
I think he might have been.
Yeah, and I think that probably plays a part. I mean, to be fair, in Hyderabad, they would have had Akshar Patel, wouldn't they? So they had a natural replacement for that. Whereas the problem with the Chennai test is Akshar Patel was also injured. So they had the double injury there. And also, you look at their spinning options, and they probably went with a safe option rather than perhaps someone a little bit more dynamic, which on that wicket is not, you know, I think, all spinners would have struggled on that wicket. It was a very good batting wicket early on. He did miss that test, did he?
Scratch that, he did not. He played the Hyderabad test, but he did miss a couple of test matches, if I remember correctly, because some injury came up. But point is that India were a bit depleted in Chennai. They weren't in Hyderabad. So it was more so batting that knocked them out in Chennai. But in Hyderabad, it was approach. 100%. How many did they end up chasing, right? Like, they chased, what, close to 400, no?
Oh, can't remember. No, it must have been less than that, wasn't it? Because didn't India make, so England make just over 400 in that second innings. So I would have thought India needed about 200, 220. Does that sound
right? England scored 420 in their third innings, because I did remember a 400, and that's the Ollie Pope knock, right? There's a clear trend over there that when they've lost to England, it's the batting, the English batting, that has kind of undone them.
Yep.
Yeah.
And as you said, two innings, really. It's two guys.
Hmm. Now, you made some comparisons, of course, or well, not comparisons per se, but you briefly spoke about how other teams have experienced hot streaks at home, Australia and the West Indies. And the West Indies had a record of 62-6 in their golden period, right? And two of those losses came to Pakistan. One of them, I believe, the team wasn't fully set up, the Wasim Raja test match. And then Imran Khan completely blew them away in the other one. And apart from those two and an Alan Lamb test match, in which he was, you know, on a tear, it's mostly dead rubbers. And if you look at Australia, it's similar. Curtly Ambrose nicks a few test matches off them and everything else is a dead rubber. Not quite relatable, or you can't really compare that to India because they lose the first test of many series, right? That's been the trend.
NV Play's tools make cricket data accessible to everyone. They assisted me in making this and support many international cricketers access their software on their website for valuable insight.
Yeah, I knew Australia was dead rubbers. I didn't know as much about the West Indies one. And I was a bit surprised that it was exactly the same. And I suppose if you look back on it, if you look at the history of cricket, I think good teams have quite regularly lost the last game. And I don't know, are you a tennis fan? Like Davis Cup, Fed Cup?
Well, not Davis Cup and Fed Cup. I'm a Grand Slam guy.
Yeah, if you watch Davis Cup and Fed Cup, and you'll see that it's a very similar pattern. Once you're up, no one cares. It's very hard to motivate yourself, and you might be the best players, but you don't roll over. And, you know, some of the incredible stuff that teams would do to Australia in the fourth or the fifth test, it's like there's no way they'd do that in a live game, but they could do it at that point. So West Indies were obviously very, very similar. And so I would say, and I'd never really done this research before, but looking at that, I did think to myself, they probably were slightly more dominant. It's just that it didn't matter what you did in the fourth or fifth test in their era. And obviously in this era, you know, the only one I would say that was kind of what a little bit like that would be indoor. But that series was still very much alive. So I don't think it was even similar to that in that way. And as you said, the bigger issue has been early on in the series, right? Like losing the first test and just allowing teams to put them on the back foot. So I think India have more wins and their run was longer than Australia and the West Indies because they all had draws in the middle of theirs. But there are more wins now because there are just more wins in all test matches. That's not just an India thing. But yeah, so I think that there's a clear difference in there in the losses, where it's really not as many crucial losses, I would say, to the West Indies and Australia as you see with India.
How many of these six test matches, I know obviously Bengaluru test from this series and then the Hyderabad test from the England series, and I reckon one of the Australian series had a first test win for Australia as well. Was it just three out of six then? First test
matches?
That's
four out of six.
Four out of six? Right, both Australia
Bengaluru
ones?
Yeah, Bengaluru, Hyderabad, Pune, and Chennai.
Oh, Chennai. So England have done it twice.
Yeah, so both of England's first ones, one of Australia's and one of New Zealand's. That's quite a high percentage. I know it's only six, so it's not a huge sample size, but it does feel like, and it's funny, you know, I remember talking to people, you know, around India when they lost in Hyderabad, kind of before and during and after. Like, it wasn't like they weren't prepared. Do you know what I mean? The Pune one was probably a little bit more randomness with the wicket. Chennai one, perhaps you could go back. Chennai and New Zealand and Bengaluru, perhaps those had more to do with the toss. But it is weird that it keeps coming up in the first test. Like, I don't think that's something we can discard.
And I mean, credit to India for 18 consecutive test wins, right? They have that over Australia and the West Indies. There's no doubt.
Also, credit to them for not doing what West Indies and Australia did, which is winning test series early and then taking the last test match off.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, I think there's also an element of that. That's the, you know, as an Australian fan, it's a weird thing to be annoyed about anything in the 90s and 2000s, but it was a bit of a thing of like, oh, great. So they're not going to try in the last test again here now. And then Mark Butcher's going to make a ridiculous innings or, you know, whoever it is. I don't know, Alan Mullally or someone's going to go crazy. And it's like, do we have to do this? Do we have, like, I much prefer, I think there was an Ashes test where Australia might have lost the first Ashes. Was it 97? I can't remember it now. That was a much more interesting. If you're going to lose one early.
Is it the Mark Butcher test? No, that was in England. That was Headingley.
Mark Butcher was Headingley. There was one in 97 when it was another tour. But Australia didn't lose that much at home or away in those days. So, like, if they're going to lose early on to keep the series alive, right? Yeah, That's the best way of doing it for your fans. You keep them on edge. So I always thought that was one cool thing about India is like they lost live test matches, you know, regularly, which in the end, the last two England tours, I think, were far more entertaining because India had to come from behind.
Yeah, and it was great for people who cover the sport as well because it adds more context to the series. But, you know, just on this whole losing the first test match thing, right? India have been routinely able to come back into the series and completely steamroll the opposition. And one begs to question that it was going to come to an end at some point. It's just that we never thought that this New Zealand team would do it.
Yeah, I think if you it's one of those things of, I'm trying to think of another side who did this, but you know, it's a bit like Pakistan, right? When Pakistan went on a big run in limited overs cricket, but if you're only playing on one side of the ball, eventually that side of the ball is going to do you know what I mean? Like if you're putting yourself in positions where everyone has to be perfect, like eventually that will fail. And so you're right. It was bound to not work at one stage. It's just that no one had New Zealand and this specific... This isn't the best New Zealand team that has travelled to India in this run.
Right? Not even close.
No.
It doesn't come close. One thing that I just remembered from earlier, you were mentioning how credit to India for actually going all the way through and winning the dead rubbers. You know what's more commendable about that is that the World Test Championship is new. They've been doing this for longer. Now, of course, you want to win everything. But, you know, prior to, what was it? When did this start? 2018?
2018, 2019? Yeah. Like so the first 6 years, they weren't losing dead rubbers either.
Exactly. You're right. Half 100%. Of their run, they were still doing the same thing. And I feel like, you know, when we talk about home test runs, India, in terms of win percentage and how they've been ruthless, do kind of stand out. Like, perhaps, you know, back in the day, well, maybe I can't speak for the West Indies because no one could beat them. But in Australia, they do drop a test here and there. They have the 7 losses in their period, right? That's the most. Mm-hmm. But in India, forget even challenging them. Winning a test match was uber hard.
No, there's no doubt. I think we did something maybe, I don't know if we did a footmarks on it as well, but we did do something on the sort of home run a while back. And, you know, India have managed to do probably what modern cricket has allowed for, which is in the old days you had a lot more draws and all of those draws have essentially gone to the home teams as wins. Like that's the big change in test cricket over the last couple of years. But India still had to win all of those matches. Hmm. Australia is probably the most impressive from that angle because they were the first team to really start to play for wins. Now, the West Indies didn't. The West Indies would try and dominate you, but they were more than happy to sit in for draws over and over again and, you know, win long series only by winning one or two test matches, whereas Australia was like, we are not going out there to do that. But at the same time, India have to go out and win all those test matches, and they have, and they were absolutely brilliant. It really is, I think because of the World Cup stuff and losing all and World Test Championship stuff, it really is completely underappreciated by Indian fans how magnificent this was.
I mean, they don't have a title to show for it in test cricket, which honestly... Yeah. They did deserve... I know that nothing is deserved in cricket, but when you've been that good for that long, to not be recognized as the best test team because of a trophy does sting you a bit.
Before the World Test Championship, you didn't need to win a one-off game, right? Hmm. So how do we know that Australia and West Indies might not have, you know... especially if they'd been in conditions that didn't quite suit them or, you know, whatever happened. Like, I don't know, let's say... I'm trying to think. A World Test Championship in the mid to late 80s... being played in Pakistan or being played in India against Pakistan for the West Indies would have been a pretty tough challenge. They didn't beat them at home, right? If Australia had to beat a really good side in India for a World Test Championship, they might have struggled as well. So it's, you know, those teams didn't have to worry about that. That's just a thing that wasn't even part of them. And it doesn't suggest that they're not as great, but they never had to go through that. And India had to travel to England and play New Zealand and Australia, who were both really, really good sides at that same period at time. And, you know, very well suited to those conditions.
Yeah. Also, you know, we've spoken of trends, how 4 out of those 6 games were first test matches of a series. Mm-hmm. And then you also discussed conditions and how in 3 of those tests out of 6, we had extreme conditions. But can we talk about the real weird thing happening over here of how a completely unknown spinner time and again will derail India? We've seen it I wouldn't call Steve O'Keefe unknown, but you know, relatively, right?
He was unknown.
Yeah. Mitch Santner, completely random. Throw Tom Hartley into this.
Mitch Santner was known, but
Not for this.
For being good at Test cricket.
Exactly. And Tom Hartley as well. He wasn't even in the Pakistan tour squad, for England.
You could throw in, you know, Kuhneman and Murphy as well, couldn't you? And did Bashir play in the Hyderabad Test?
No, he didn't get a visa. Remember?
Oh my God, he didn't. So who was their second spinner in that test?
It might have been Rehan. No, was it?
I can't even remember.
Might have been Rehan.
Yeah. I think that's fair. And again, that comes back to my original theory from before of if you produce wickets that are going to rag at a certain point, you know, it's the Joe Root taking, what did he take? 5 for 7 or something in one test match. Michael Clarke taking 6 for 9. I know that was a different era, but a similar kind of thing. If you produce pitches where suddenly on a flat pitch in India, I still expect Jadeja and Ashwin to average low to mid 20s, right? But I expect Jack Leach to average 40.
Yeah.
Right? If you've got a pitch where it's suddenly ragging from ball one, I expect those other two guys to average about 15 to 16, but I expect his brother. I expect Jack Leach to suddenly average 19 to 20 to 21, right? And that is what we're really talking about. And that is when it becomes the ball could go soft. You get the slightly better conditions, you get the toss or whatever. There's a couple of catches dropped and that makes all the difference. So the Pune test where Australia win, Steve Smith played a great innings. I remember having an argument with an Australian cricketer about this. He said, it's one of the greatest innings of all times. And I was like, he was dropped like 3 or 4 times. And they were like, yeah, but if you look at the artistry within that, and I was like, yeah, but he was dropped a lot of times. Like if he takes one of those catches, you're not telling me it's one of the greatest innings of all time.
Yeah.
If India had taken that catch, they might've been in the situation to steal that test match.
True. I just checked, by the way, Hyderabad, the recent one, England's win, had Tom Hartley, Rehan Ahmed, Jack Leach, and Joe Root bowled a fuck ton of overs in that game. Took wickets as well.
That actually, yeah.
Yeah. So there's another random one.
Yeah. So, you know, I think Joe Root took like a lot of wickets a few times over there. And again, we're not saying Joe Root is a bad bowler. People get really upset sometimes because everyone sort of overrates him a little bit when I sort of go, let's settle down, everyone. Like if he was really an all-rounder, he would be permanently bowling for this team. He's not at that level.
Yeah.
But his best ball on certain pitches is really, really good. But again, he shouldn't be taking wickets consistently unless the wicket is massively in his favor. And that is when he's absolutely at his best. So it's the same thing. If you make the pitches too random and too extreme, you bring in the Tom Hartley, Steve O'Keefe, Mitch Santner type of things. Now the Mitch Santner one, I don't think that was India's fault, to be fair. I just think that was a bit of a weird wicket. But once you have a situation like that, that's what happens. Like the average spinner suddenly becomes really, really good. And the really good spinners, they don't suddenly go from like brilliant to like an average of 1 or 2 every time. Sometimes they just go along. So I suppose the best way of putting it is it just makes things more variable. I always said that India didn't need that. They just needed helpful conditions, not ragging conditions. Because in helpful conditions, Leach is fine, but Indians should be able to play Leach and Ashwin and English / other teams shouldn't be able to play Ashwin or Jadeja.
Yep. And I mean, that's always what we've kind of argued is that they're such a good team pound for pound. You look at this team, right? Bumrah, Jadeja, Ashwin. 3 world-class bowlers. You throw in the Rohits and Kohlis and all the young guns as well. They're like completely sorted. And this is exactly when they've kind of lost this test series, when no one had imagined in their wildest, you know, or imaginations, whatever. And it is interesting, right? And I mean, there's one really, really big thing that's going on over here. One common theme in all of these test matches, which maybe is brushed under the rug at times. And that's India's batting. When they lose, the batting fails, but they fail gloriously. 46 all out, 156 all out on this wicket. And this too, by the way, the Pune wicket was different, but it was still an extreme. Extreme in the sense that slow spinners and tall spinners were, you know, getting some help. And you look at the batting across these losses and there have been so many collapses. And that's not to take away from all the brilliant batting that India have done in the wins, but this is...
You can't win consistently without being better than the opposition at batting. And they have consistently been better than the opposition at batting. But when they haven't, it's like, I don't think, like in the Chennai test, for instance, when England makes 600, it wasn't a full strength bowling side. So you could take that away. In the Baz Ball game, when England make 400, It's more of a, what the hell? Oh my God, how do we deal with, why is the Ollie Pope not going out? Whereas the vast majority of the rest of the games have not been like that, right? Mm. And so when it comes down to it, even though they've been batting not at the levels that we have seen our previous Indian teams, they've been batting more than well enough. And even when they've bowled poorly in a couple of these losses, the batting has still stood out for being poor, right? Like the England, when England makes 600 in Chennai, and I think India, did they make 600 or 550, whatever they ended up on. But I think India's like 200 runs behind. Like they were, it wasn't like they got close to England's total. They were massively behind, right? As you said, the 46 all out in indoor. Yeah. Did they make 220 runs in combined in that indoor game? I'm not sure if they did.
Let me just check.
In Pune, as you said before, they gave away a bunch of wickets. They had a collapse there. In Bengaluru, they had the 46 all out collapse and then they had the second new ball collapse, right? Yep. They had dual collapses in that one. You go through and it's like every single the one common thread really has been the batting.
Thanks to NV Play for their in-depth performance analysis in this project. Discover more about their incredible tools and solutions on their website.
Yeah. If you look at these scores, right, India made 105 and 107, I reckon, in the Pune. That's the indoor test, right?
I think they made slightly more than that in Pune, but I don't think they scored a lot of runs in. I don't think they would have made 300 runs in the. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it is around 300 in Pune, but it's not like a There wasn't, Australia didn't have to bat them out of the game. It was one good knock from Smith was enough to win that game.
So if, you know, a betting person were to look to make some mad money and there is a test series coming up in India, you'd probably do well if you bet on the first test, India to lose and score under 200?
Well, I can tell you the game that I bet on recently was, I bet on Bangladesh before they bowled a ball. And they lost the three early wickets and then they had that fight back and I just kept my bet in long enough for the next three wickets. And then I thought, I got out. So I made a lot. And it was based on that theory.
Yeah.
Right. Once Ashwin and Jadeja started to go the other way, I was like, I think there was a couple of edges from Ashwin that got away with it. But that test isn't that far away from being in that. And who knows, India might have fought back and come back. But it's a similar kind of thing again. The test match starts. The Indian batters put the team under massive pressure, and whether it is the bowlers or the middle order or the bowlers and batting or however you look at it, they have to get them out of it. And in these losses, that hasn't been the case, right? It hasn't been a case that they've been able to do that. And so to go back to the Pune test that against Australia, maybe you were right. That is the one where they made 220. And I can't even remember what they made against in indoor then. I thought that maybe I got my two confused.
I think we did establish that was indoor, 105 and however many, right? Because they got completely blown.
Oh, I looked up the wrong one. No, Pune.
Is it?
Yeah, because this is O'Keefe taking two sixes.
Okay.
Australia made 260 in the first innings when Renshaw played a good knock. I don't think that might have been the game where Renshaw almost crapped himself on the field. I know that has nothing to do with the story, but always fun to talk about. KL Rahul makes runs in that game. It's funny how he never makes runs when they struggle, except he made 64 out of 105 there. Australia made 285 in the second innings, which is basically on the back of Smith's 100.
Yep.
And then India made 107. I mean, they were already out of the game by that point. But, you know, that's an incredibly low amount of runs in a game. Like, that's a big, big loss against, essentially, if you go back into that scorecard, Renshaw played a pretty decent innings and then Smith made 100. And that was enough to completely destroy India in that game because they didn't make any runs.
And that has been the trend. India, of course, will impress us time and again. Most recent example is Bengaluru. When they came out to bat in their second dig, they at one point we thought they might even win it, right? And a lot of us were confident about that. So while the hallmark of their success has been spin bowling and batting, that has kind of also proven to be an antidote at times when the surface is an extreme one and when the batting fails gloriously. And this is an aging squad now, Jared. You've got some, you know, S-tier talents, you know, upcoming in Shubman Gill and Yashasvi Jaiswal. But Rohit Sharma and Virat Kohli have been on the decline, right, in recent times. That's got to be a worry because if the batting lets them down in the future, then they could lose a lot more.
I just think they need to produce more batting-friendly wickets. And I don't mean flat wickets. more than happy for them to have a little bit of assistance for whatever kind of bowlers they're trying to help. But I don't think you can be in a situation where the wickets are so weighted towards bowling and expect your next generation to just start. And I don't think this has just been a problem for India in India. I think this has been a problem. I think this is a big part of the reason that Rohit Sharma has had his issues, that Pujara had issues, that Rahane had issues, and most importantly, Virat Kohli. If you're not making runs at home, which is generally where you where people make their runs, you don't feel as confident to make runs when you travel, right? You're not as used to making runs. And it's not like any of these guys play a lot of first-class cricket, you know, outside of Test cricket. You know, Pujara's probably the one that does, but maybe more of that is since he's been out of the side anyway. But these guys aren't playing a lot of cricket. And if they're not used to making runs, I just think that's a huge issue for them. You don't want the same thing to happen to Jaiswal. Jaiswal, in 5 years' time, should be the world's best batter. Right? Unless something goes horribly wrong and we discover something about him we don't know at the moment. But he has the natural talent and the intelligence and the grit, all the different things you need to be the world's best batter.
Yeah.
Do you really want to be in a situation where he's averaging 35 at home because you keep having ranging pitches? Like, I don't see how that helps India all that much. And then you've got the fact that, you know, you've talked about that side of things. The other side of it is Ashwin and Jadeja might be coming towards the end, right?
I mean, like, they're quite old at this point. And this is probably the first series in my memory where I've seen them fail. And not just fail, they were pretty bad, right? Ashwin and Jadeja were outspun by Mitch Santner and Washington Sundar in Pune. Let's take Bengaluru out of it. The ball was doing nothing for spinners. But in Pune, you know, out of all of those spinners that were playing, who would have thought that Mitch Santner and Washington Sundar would be the most successful ones?
It's the only time they've averaged more than 35 in a series since they lost to Swan and Panesar. And those were flatter wickets in that series. Not that they bowled well together, particularly, obviously, with the average, but there was that was a very good England side as well. When it comes down to it, I'm not quite... Sid Monga, who, you know, I respect incredibly, he sort of said he thought it was the end. I think it's more conditions-based so far. I think Ashwin bowled a bit too quick for Pune. And Jadeja was too short for Pune. And as you said, the other pitch ain't going to be helping no one.
I don't think it's the end of the road for these guys by any means. I still think they've got some juice left in the tank. But now I do
But what if they just retire anyway?
I mean, we don't really see that from Asian cricketers.
I think there was a lot of players. Well, you say that. I think there was a lot of Indian cricketers who were holding on for the World Test Championship. Doesn't mean all of them are. But we know for Rohit and Virat, it was absolutely massive. Jadeja is constantly injured, right? So I could see him going. Ashwin, I think, as long as his body stays reasonably healthy, should be able to bowl until he's about 42. But he may not want to, right? Yeah. Like, and the other thing is, when you say we don't see it for Asian cricketers, I think you're right, traditionally. The one thing I would throw in there is we never saw the IPL before.
Yes, they don't have, or they didn't earn as much money as they do now in the past.
So if I'm Ashwin and I'm like, okay, I've got about another 2 or 3 years of being a top player in the IPL. I can maybe squeeze out another couple of 3 years at the other end. He'd have to make a decision at that stage if Test cricket is helping or hindering that, right? Like, I think that's all fair. So there's four players that we've talked about. Mohammad Shami is the fifth one, just because, again, him and Jadeja, the problem is just them ever being fit, right?
Yep.
They can't get fit enough. Again, Mohammad Shami looks at this and goes, it's a lot easier to bowl 24 balls than an 8-over spell, right? Like, all those things are the variable that we don't know. And then we haven't seen India really, we haven't seen what might happen if, you know, we've got a new coach, the BCCI have now lost to New Zealand at home. Will there be panic, right? It's a, you know, what happened to Kuldeep?
Yeah.
So I was told he was dropped. Then we heard he was injured. Then he wasn't in the squad to Australia. That seems like a bunch of really conflicting and rash things that have happened in a short period of time. So I find the whole thing really, really interesting about what they might do next.
I mean, we were talking about it on many podcasts, by the way. If you guys have missed out on like a month of good areas, we literally did like four podcasts on how India were great at home and near invincible. And we brought a time machine into the mix to get teams from the past, players from the past. We did everything. And I guess the most shocking bit of this is that they lost to a team that they really shouldn't have lost to. That's what it comes down to.
Yeah, and that's the thing for me. I think I'm full of admiration for the New Zealand cricketers for going over there and thinking they could win, finding a way to win and doing it. Because, geez, you and I have spent weeks trying to work out how the hell you beat this team. And they just went over and did it.
Yeah, I mean, but who would have thought Mitch Santner would bring an end to India's run?
No one.
Yeah.
No one would have thought that. But when you look at the weird confluence here of the first pitch and then perhaps the second pitch suiting Mitch Santner more than it did the Indian bowlers, I do think at that point you do have to admit that there is an element of it's a three test series. If it was a four test series, maybe we get out of this with a draw still, right? I mean, I'm saying that India could still lose this last test, but as we sit here, there is an element of you could work that out intellectually. I mean, it is harder to say that because we never saw the West Indies or Australia have to do this, right? So I don't know, but I kind of felt that I still think if you run back that Bengaluru test a few times, even if, forget the first innings, just start it from the second innings, I reckon there's a few versions of that India win.
Yeah.
I just, you know, and they just didn't go ahead and win it this time. And so all those things, and how many times does Virat Kohli miss a full toss because he makes a really late decision to swat it away for an easy boundary, right? You know, little things like that you know, could go, if you're playing these test matches through a simulation, could go a slightly different way. So I would hope that they don't over panic, but the problem is that in international cricket, we think about it so differently than we do in franchise cricket and, you know, English football and American sports. There's just this rush to press the reset button. It's like, I don't know. I'm not sure I would be in. Can't we just occasionally go, you know, some shit went against us here. Let's try and win the next test. And if we don't win the next test, let's just all sit down and have an adult conversation. That is not generally how test cricket is run.
No, and definitely, you know, cricket is so big in Asia that losing is a bigger deal as well. And if they do press the panic button, I wouldn't be particularly surprised. But, you know, we used to talk about dynasty building, of how the West Indies were able to do it and how we felt confident that India might be able to achieve that. And don't get me wrong, Akshar could replace Jadeja, Washington could replace Ashwin going into the future, but it doesn't seem all that straightforward now, does it?
The fact that Akshar wasn't brought in for this test match is really interesting to me. I haven't heard that he's injured, and apologies if I've missed that. The fact that Kuldeep is not going to Australia, they were two of the people that we were talking about for the dynasty building, right? That's like that's like Richie Richardson getting dropped in 1989 because he's had like a bad test match and just being like, no, we're going to try someone else now. And it's like, what? Well, you don't drop Richie Richardson. you drop one of the other guys. You drop Gus Logie. Right, this is only going to make sense for people who remember those sides. But that's the kind of point of like, why would you have done this? And that screams to me that I think there's a few different, I don't want to say agendas because that makes it sound dark, but I think there's a few different theories about how India should be going in the next year and a half. Gautam Gambhir has come in after the Bangladesh test. We're all like, wow. And after these two test matches, we're like, wait, what? So what is his future with all this? I think it's just it could go in so many different directions.
Yep.
But if you tell me that you've got Jaiswal, Gill, Sarfraz, Iyer, Juve Jarrell, Rishabh Pant, Kuldeep, let's imagine he still exists, my man Washington, Mayank Yadav coming through, I find it hard to think that they're not still in a position where they can reload, even if they do make a panic decision. Yeah. But if they do reload, then it won't be the West Indies. It will be more like Australia, which had a great run based on two players and a lot of other talented players behind them. But basically, because they had Ashwin, Jadeja, McGrath and Warne, that finishes and there's a little bit of a reload and then you have a kick back up because the team never gets shit. But it isn't quite, you know, that period between, 2007 and 2000 and whenever Australia get good again, 2012, 13, I can't even remember. I have to go back to my numbers.
It's but the Hilton House and Dougie Bollinger years, right? Which were
talking about. Peter Siddle being a main bowler and Mitchell Johnson before he gets good, all that sort of stuff. Australia wasn't ever terrible. They were poor in that period. Ponting starts to struggle in that period, right? Hussey has a couple of down years. Gilchrist and Hayden drop off.
Yep.
It's clear that there's two different generations. The next generation sort of starts with Stark, Hazelwood, Smith, and all those guys in around 2013, 2014. And I don't know, maybe India does that. It's just that we thought they were set up enough to be able to maybe smooth over that those cracks a little bit more in that sort of Courtney Walsh, Ian Bishop, Kirtley Ambrose, Brian Lara kind of way.
Yeah.
It just doesn't, it looks slightly less likely at the moment, but this could just be an aberration. The thing about modern test cricket.
This could be a blip. It could be a one-off. It's very likely. Yep,
exactly. And I think the thing about modern test cricket that is that we have to remember is the last 2 months have been fucking batshit, right?
Yeah.
Like absolutely crazy. And because of that, there should be more variability in the results. And so that wasn't the case with the West Indies. You all right? No, there weren't many close matches with the West Indies. They were just better than everyone else. And if they and if you could get to the to a point where you made them struggle, they would just draw the game.
Yeah.
Right? Those aren't no one could draw a game anymore. It's almost impossible to draw a test match anymore unless the wicket is completely, you know, or there's just so much rain. And so when the West Indies were in those sorts of situations, that happened. Australia drew quite a few matches and quite a few series. At the same point, you know, that incredible series against New Zealand when they don't win a test match, right, at home. So that is impossible now, right? So maybe that series against New Zealand that Australia drew, if it was played in modern cricket, maybe New Zealand win it, right?
Yeah.
It's also possible it's 1-1 right now, but however you look at it. But the point being is that there are more results. And so if that's the case, there is more chance of more blips in that sort of way. And even with the wins that we're talking about before, where most of the losses that these teams had were dead rubbers.
Yes.
Right? We don't have those anymore. So the blips now are, again, not blip, that's the wrong way of putting it, but the losses that you have now are probably more likely to be important because, again, in the old days, perhaps, I'm trying to think, the Chennai test might have been a perfect example in old cricket where if the opposition made 600, India might have just batted for 150 overs for their 350 and taken so much time out of the game. And then England wouldn't have gone out there and tried to score really quickly and declare really quickly because that's not how cricket used to be played. So, you know, and the Hyderabad match, right, doesn't exist in the old days.
Yep.
There's no way a team could come back like that because no one ever scored at that kind of rate. So,
it's not possible.
So it has changed. And so that, I think, feeds into your theory about the potential for a blip here. And so what we have to accept then is maybe no team will ever go on a similar kind of run to the West Indies or Australia just because there is going to be more variability. So whoever wins in the future is going to win more than West Indies and Australia did, but they might also lose more.
No, that is a fantastic point because you've got to notice how test cricket has evolved and now draws are, I think, of the past, they're near extinction. And that also kind of feeds into this whole narrative that India has potential to lose more in the future. But what worries me is that, as we mentioned earlier, the succession plan doesn't really seem great, especially when the bowling attack is concerned, right? Kuldeep seems out of favor. Mohammad Shami is injured and we don't know what his, you know, health is looking like at the moment. They're saying that they might bring him in for the BGT trophy or whatever, but I'm not sure. Bumrah is 30 plus. Let's not forget that Bumrah is 30 plus, right? And there's a massive gulf between Bumrah and the next best seamer because Shami isn't available. These aren't ideal things and all of it is kind of coming to the fore at the same time, which is why I fear that building a dynasty is going to be a lot more complicated than I thought, 2 weeks ago?
Exactly. And I think, you know, you go back to compare it to the Australian team where you had Warner, McGrath and Langer all leave in the same test match. Hayden was probably pretty close to finished, I think, at that stage. Mm. But because he'd had a shorter career, I think he was like, no, I'm going to play on a little bit longer.
Yeah.
Gilchrist was pretty much finished by that stage. Mm. And Ponting has, I want to say Ponting is finished by 2009, 2010, I think, as far as being a great player, right? And so what can you do? This whole idea of succession planning, it's great. Well, yeah, you should definitely go out and find another Ashwin and Jadeja, right? Like, you know, you should definitely find another Virat Kohli and Rohit Sharma and, you know, Mohammad Shami and Jasprit Bumrah. Like, I'm on your side. But how do you – international teams don't allow that kind of succession plan. Like, if you're a football team, you could probably still sell Ashwin and Jadeja for a shit ton of money right now, right? If you're an NBA team, you know, you could easily trade Ashwin and Jadeja to a team who's like trying to win the World Test Championship now. And like, which one of them do you want?
Yep.
Right? Like, but just give us New Zealand. You want to win a buttload more of games? We'll give you Ashwin and Jadeja. Can we have Ravindra?
Yeah.
Right? Like, you know, those sorts of things is what you can do. What do you do in international sport? All you do is beg your players not all to retire at the same time. And Australia did that for years, and Warner McGrath still did it, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's like sometimes when you're finished, you're finished.
And Langer, not just Warren McGrath, all three of those guys.
I mean, Langer not as important, to that. But yeah, Langer going at the same time. So Australia's big thing, and we were all brought up to remember this, was that... that Chappell and Marsh and Lilly all went at the same time. Hmm. And have a look what happened to Australia in the mid-80s. It took a long time for them to recover, right? And Australian cricket was told over and over again, we'll never let this happen again. We'll never let this happen again. And then Warren, McGrath and Langer went in the same fucking test match. And it's like, there's not much you can do. You can, you know, Australia had Stuart Clarke. They had literally the best, you know, McGrath replacement they could find, and it still wasn't enough, right? Like, that's just the situation and where you find yourself.
I mean, McGill just dropped off, right? As soon as Vaughan retired.
Yeah, oh, sorry. Yeah, you're right. Hilarious. They had Clark and they had McGill. Yeah. They literally had the best backups and it still went to shit.
Yeah, so you never really know how the future will pan out. And I think we've discussed dynasties enough. This podcast wasn't even about that. Just to conclude, we've brought up multiple factors over here. There's the first test loss thing with India, 4 out of 6. Extreme conditions where, you know, Australia's wins, both of them were ranked earners. And these two test matches versus New Zealand were unintentional extremes in a way, right?
Yep.
You have to say. So that's a theme. You have to throw in random ass spinners doing really, really well in these test matches. And then India's batting just not, you know, being able to cut it as we expect them to. So you've got these four very, very distinct, you know, trends. What would you say is the biggest worry or the biggest reason why India lose at home?
I think it's the batting.
Hmm. Yeah, I think I agree.
I think if you have systematically made it so it is very hard to consistently make runs at home, so that your players never get any confidence and never get the ability to consistently make runs. I think you have to accept that there, when you are going to lose, it is going to be through that skill set that is most likely going to fail you. And if to go back to the West Indies and Australia, both of those teams never did any of that sort of stuff, right? And I don't think India needed to do it. I understand why they did it, because if you have Ashwin and Jadeja, you don't want them bowling 58 overs every game and you don't want them tired out and you play to your strengths. Like, I'm not having a go at that. But in Australians and West Indians felt pretty confident about making runs at home, which meant when they traveled away from home, they made runs as well. And so when they came back home, they were even doubly confident at that point. And that is just not the case with these Indian batters.
Yeah.
They at home, they had juiced up wickets, and away from home, they had the wobble ball. Like, it's kind of the absolute worst case scenario. So I'm not slagging off the batters. I'm not saying that the batting is the issue as far as the individual batters, but I'm saying what the issue was is that India kind of accidentally created this, but it also allowed them to win a lot more tests at home, is probably what they would argue. And Jadeja, who's always injured, maybe they've got more test matches out of him because he hasn't had to bowl those, you know, Anil Kumble.
Yeah.
I don't know how many overs per game Anil Kumble bowled, but I think it's in the top five of all time. I think it's like Clary Grimmett, Murali and Kumble are in the top five, right? It's like, if you do that, you eventually end up with them not playing at their peak. Whereas by making them bowl 40 overs a game, you probably got more of them out of their peak, but it's also produced more variability in your wins.
Yes. And I mean, Jared's picked the batting. And I think while all four things have value, I'm also leaning towards the batting because that is one common theme in those losses. Despite the fact that in some of those games, they've also done well, you know, in a particular innings. But you guys have it all in front of you. Let us know in the comment section below what you feel are the major reasons or the biggest reason why India lose at home.
Is it Bayram's beard?
Is it? Is it my beard? Because it very well could be. But anyway, we'd love to hear back from you. And that's all for this episode of Footmarks. Just a quick reminder, you can go to goodareas.co and bookmark that webpage. It can prove to be a one-stop shop for all the work that we do as part of this team, whether it be written content, podcasts, or videos. We'll be back with another episode of Footmarks soon enough. But that's all for today, guys. Have a good one and goodbye.
Thank you for listening. This podcast has an ad-free version via Patreon, where there are also many other extras as well, including a Discord channel where you can chat to me directly. There is a link to the Patreon in the show notes. We are an independent podcast, So support us any way you can. Maybe give us a review, subscribe, or share on social media. All of these things help us. And when it comes to podcasts, word of mouth is always the best way of making it grow. If we had a guest on, chances are their socials are in the show notes. Please support everyone who comes on this show. I am Jared Kimber, and this is my network. But we also have hosts and co-hosts like Bahram Kazi and Estelle Vassadevan. This network is overseen by Nick McCorriston, and each episode is produced by Ishit Kaburka at Sound Potion Studio. Mukunda Bandredi, or Muku as most people will know, is the head of our YouTube channels, and he also helps out with so many other things like the podcast recordings. And there's so many other people we could thank here, but I just want to thank all the listeners and all the people who help behind the scenes that make this podcast work. If you make any content, Minbo Pro is the tool for you. Take your long format content and cut it and slice it for social media. This AI-inspired weapon will turn your one piece of work into so many clips. Try Minbo.pro now.